The Guardian.
Hey listener, AC Jimbo here to bring you the last in our sure-to-be award-winning series of Barry Glendenning's interviews with players from Christmas past. And we're going out with a bang too, for this is Barry's chat with Chris Kamara, recorded in May 2015, where they discussed Cammy's playing days, his unlikely bromance with Jose Mourinho, and his fondness for a bit of classic era Elton John. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Chris, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Can I call you Cammy?
Cammy is what everybody calls me. Oh, the only person that ever calls me Chris is my wife and my poor departed old mum.
All right. And does your wife call you Chris only when you've done something wrong or all the time?
No, she calls me Christopher when I've done something wrong. She calls me Chris all the other time, but no, everyone else calls me Cammy. Even my kids call me Cammy.
Okay.
No, that's not true. They call me Dad.
So I presumed you joined the Royal Navy because you saw the Village People video.
YMCA and all that, you know. I can't lay claim to that, although I think that was one of the first dances with my wife when I met her in Swindon.
So your dad, because, I mean, my dad's a pretty tough guy, but in a situation like that, I think I would have stood up to him, but that wasn't an option.
No, it wasn't an option at all, no, because I had the opportunity. Dave Richardson, who has been working for the Premier League as an academy coach, to this day, we still meet up and chat about it. He said to me, look, you've got a chance of being an apprentice footballer at Middlesbrough, you know, so don't do anything rash. We've got a cup final in a couple of weeks' time. You'll be playing for Middlesbrough boys. We'll speak to you then. And I had to contact him and say, look, I'm not playing in the Middlesbrough boys final. I have got a job in the Navy. And he said, you know, you're an idiot because you've got a chance of being a footballer. And I said, well, I don't have that choice, to be honest. And so I had to go that way.
So you're in the Navy against your will, pretty much. How was it for you?
It was great, to be fair, because I went down to Torpoint in Devon. And so I'd virtually, the first 2 weeks I got there, the Navy football team were training there. So I went to watch them train, and this is men we're talking about, big men and all that sort of thing. I'm a 15-year-old, skinny, scrawny little kid. And I went to see the manager and I said, look, I've been watching you for the last couple of weeks. Can I join in? And he went, no. He said, these lot will kick lumps out of you. And I said, no. I said, I think I can hold my own. You know, and I was sort of like an attacking midfielder in those days, could play centre forward as well as midfield and score some goals. And he said, no. And anyway, one day they were training and there were a man short. And I used to just sit on the bank watching them train, and there was a running track next to it, so I kept myself fit and all that. And he said, oh, come on, you can come and join in. Anyway, I went and joined in and played really well, scored a few goals. And he went, oh, good, you're not bad at all, are you? You're not bad. And he put me straight into the Navy football team, which was the best thing he could have done. We played against Portsmouth. I scored two goals against the Portsmouth youth team. And that was it. They said, look, we'll buy you out for a couple of £100. And I got the Navy. I had to get the Navy to send my dad a letter to say that if it didn't work out, that they would take me back in the Navy.
Okay, so yeah.
He was okay then. And to be fair, the fact that I was down in Portsmouth at that time, I got transferred from Plymouth to Portsmouth. The fact that he was in Middlesbrough, you know, basically, I didn't, you know, he couldn't do that much about it, if you know what I mean. Whereas, yeah, you know, I would have done it, even if the Navy hadn't given me that letter to send to him, I would have still followed the Portsmouth route. And Ian St John, it was his first ever signing as a manager. Ray Crawford was the youth team manager. He recommended me to Ian St John, and Ian St John took over Portsmouth 3 days before I signed, and I met Ian St John, and he said, look, I heard you've done well against our youth team, scored a couple of goals, you'll be an apprentice for the next couple of years, we will give you the pricely sum of £10 a week.
More or less than what you were on?
I was on £18 a week in the Navy, right. So it was a cut, it was a massive cut, yeah, yeah. So, so £10 a week, and when it comes to the summer, because I think it was December at that time, when it comes to the summer, your wages go up to £12 a week, and if you get into the first team, it's £50 appearance and £25 a point, or a win or a draw. So it was £50 a win and £25 a draw.
You must be absolutely sick now when you see kids changing hands for, you know.
Fortune. Well, I'm fortunate because I earn my money off the lads in the game now, so yeah. I don't begrudge them one single penny. You know, what I do though, and I look at back in Salt Lake. You know, just the other day when I saw Jimmy Greaves has just had a stroke and all these lads, and when I go around all the football grounds, I see legends, you know, going around the suites at football grounds for, you know, a couple of hundred quid, yeah, and these lads who, you know, some of them mercenaries coming and earn an absolute fortune. That's when I feel a little bit sad about it. But, and you know, as far as I'm concerned now, you know, I work for Sky. I couldn't earn my money without them fellas playing football, so it's not a problem to me.
I mean, I was rubbish at football, but I thought, I always think I might have had a better chance if I hadn't started my career as an 8-year-old and a left back, not really understanding the offside rule.
Well, you didn't have
a given. How important
there are not many people I know who start off as a left back. An 8-year-old.
No, you're a limit. Everyone else wanted to be a striker or midfielder, so I thought, well, if I put my hand up for that, you know, I'll get it.
I always remember when I went to Leeds and Howard Wilkinson asked me to play left back. I'd covered in right back position for Mel Sterland, which was fine. And then Jim Beglin and Glyn Snodding got injured, and he asked me to play left back. And I just went, yeah, you know. And I went home that night, and I remember just thinking, no, you know, I know I can play centre mid and I can play right back because I'm, you know, right sided footed. How am I going to get on left back? And I had to mark Tony Daly at Aston Villa. You know, so it's my first game at left back for Leeds. Anyway, I managed to blag it and get away with it, but I wish I'd have had the thoughts in my head from an 8-year-old. Well, it's difficult to say. It's really difficult to say, because how many academies are there these days? And, you know, how many opportunities are these kids getting? And then, you know, we hear that, you know, that these kids are being spoiled by the foreign players coming into the game, which to a certain extent is okay, yeah. But we never had any academies when I was a kid. The one thing we had a tennis ball or we had a proper football to go out on the streets and play football with. And we did that. We didn't have computers. We hardly ever watched the telly because it just wasn't in your remit. Your mum and dad kicked you out of the house and you went back in at, what you know, as long as you were in at 12, 1 o'clock, it didn't make any difference to them. As long as you went to school the next day, it didn't make any difference to them. And then they didn't even know when you were at school or they weren't at school, you know, which you weren't quite a lot of the time. So the thing was, it was football, football, football. So, and that was just playing with your mates and doing all that. And once you get to 15, 16, then you should get the coaching or whatever. But now they're getting academies from 8-year-old. So why are we not producing magnificent footballers here, there and everywhere if these academies are the be-all and end-all? That's the thing that puzzles me, that's all I have to say.
You could probably, I suppose, blind kids that young with science as well and put them off the game if you worry too much about positional sense or tactics or whatnot.
Yeah, but...
How important do you think it is for young kids who are just starting the game to have very good coaching?
The thing is, the Wayne Rooneys and the wonder kids of this world will always come through. You know, there's no question about that. Whether you have an academy or you don't have an academy, they'll find their way through, you know. But I do feel that, you know, some of these academies do need to take a look at themselves and, you know, and think, you know, what Chelsea's academy, you know, where's the players coming through at Chelsea? Where are they? You know, why are you spending...
They're at BTS Arnhem, I think.
Yeah, why are you spending millions and millions and millions of pounds when the club is just going to buy players to put in the first team? Because, you know, the managers that they get have to guarantee success. They don't have to guarantee bringing a youngster through and making things fabulous for them. If you're like Arsenal, you've got half a chance as a youngster of playing. You know, look at the kids that they bring through or look at the kids that they go and buy because of the development of the club. So there is different scenarios at different football clubs.
Just describe your management style, because, you know, you come across as a very affable bloke. Everyone likes you. Can you be the tough guy when you need to?
Yeah, you have to. As a manager, you have to change, you know. You really do. I didn't like the person I become, I'll be honest with you, as a manager. You know, I didn't like that person at all. But I enjoyed managing Bradford City. I really did. We had success. We got promotion from what is League One to the Championship. Nowadays, and that went really, really well. I went to Stoke City, which is a big disappointment for me. They'd only won one game in 13, and I took over and thought, right, I'll do this, that and the other, and probably approached it all wrongly. Made mistakes, got out of my depth at times in situations where I panicked and did the wrong things and all that sort of stuff, but it was a great learning curve for me. You know, I was there for 3 months before we agreed to mutually part company. And it was one of those, you know, when you sit back from something like that and you look at what you've done wrong, the mistakes that you made, why you did them, why you shouldn't have done them, and it's in terms of football knowledge, from then on, you know that you're never going to stop learning about football. You're always going to be understanding. And so now I can understand sometimes what managers are going through. When you see Nigel Pearson the other day come out with the stuff about the ostrich and everything, I know exactly where it's coming from, because your mind is just gone. Your mind, you know, the only thing you're trying to focus on is staying in that particular division or keeping everybody happy within the squad. And you do and say things that you shouldn't say, and you get carried away. And it's all right for the likes of Sir Alex Ferguson and Jose Mourinho and Arsene Wenger and people like them to say, you know, we'd never do things like that. But I'd love to see them back in the day when they were starting off in the game and they made decisions and made mistakes and did all those sort of things, because that's how it happens. Until you get into their comfortable position, what they get into through longevity and class and everything else like that, then that's when you become a lot better. But you can look up to them guys and see how they do it now and think, right, you know, can I build to that level?
Well, there's no doubt in the success of Mourinho and Ferguson, but I think a lot of people would argue about their class as in, you know, as men sometimes on occasion. They do
things that benefit their football club. So that's the thing that you have to understand. When everyone was hating Sir Alex and saying, like, you know, this is what he's doing, this is what he's saying and everything, he's doing it for the benefit of his football club, you know. When he finishes and retires, like Sir Alex has, I'm sure he looks back at it and thinks, oh, how on earth did I do that? Why did I get away with it? How did I get away with it? And all that sort of thing. And I think it's only the same as Jose Mourinho. You are saying things that will benefit your football club, you know. So his latest spat with Arsene Wenger and all that sort of stuff, it puts Arsene Wenger in two minds. It really does, you know. As much as he says he's been disrespectful, he also knows that the next time they play him, he's so desperate to go and beat them that he can actually wallow in his success if it actually happens. But it hasn't happened yet, so he hasn't had that opportunity. So there's me thinking he never watched the show on a Sunday morning or anything like that. And so it was great. So he said, look, here's my telephone number if you want to speak to us and everything like that. And he said, I'd love to come on the show someday. And obviously we text each other over other business and we talk about football occasionally. And whenever I'm at Stamford Bridge, which is not very often, I would have to say in the time that he's been the manager, the games I've done at Stamford Bridge are probably, you could count on one hand. But every time I've been there, I've gone in his office afterwards and had a drink with him and everything like that. Very hospitable, just, you know, like a proper English manager would do that type of stuff. Well, he's been a friend of mine for a long time. When he first came over to England, the first time I met him was at Fulham. I was just stood outside and he came walking towards me and he said, can I just shake your hand? And I said, oh, Jose Mourinho wanted to shake my hand. He said, I'd just like to say that watching you and Andy Gray, you educate people on the game. So I thought, oh, thanks ever so much. You know, it's great, what a compliment that is. So we struck up a friendship, you know. So from that time, over the last 8 or 9 years, I've been texting him and saying, you've got to come on goals on Sunday. You know, you've promised me. And he's saying, yeah, I will do. So I said, yeah, no problem. Phoned the producer straight away. I said, has the production staff gone home? He said, no, they're just about to leave, though. He said, they normally leave at 9, but I've told them to go at 10 too because all the work's done. I said, well, you better tell them to stay and cut some more packages and everything of Jose Mourinho, this, that and the other. And he went, you're kidding me? I said, no, he's definitely coming on in the morning. I said, but don't get rid of James Beattie yet, because he's promised to text me once he's in the car. And once we've got him in the car, this is his address in Fulham. This is his address. Once he's in the car, then we can announce to the outside world that he's coming on, because in that time, somebody might say to him, look, don't go on goals on Sunday, because you might regret saying the odd thing or two. So anyway, lo and behold, 9:45, Jose rings me. 9:15, sorry, Jose rings me. We're on at 10:30. Jose rings me. I'm in the car on my way to Sky. So I thought, great. So I goes on Sky Sports News and announces it. By the time I finish on Sky Sports News, as I'm walking off the set to go and get ready to rehearse for goals on Sunday, found Sean Dyche. Well, I knew it was something like that. I knew it. he'll be using you. He'll come on to use you. And I'm thinking.
When you read a Sean Dyche text, do you read it in his voice?
Of course. Of course. But I mean, me and him get on famously. You know, the thing about goals on Sunday or me on Soccer Saturday. I'm 100% fair in whatever happens. You know, I don't have any issues with any of the clubs. I don't tend to lean towards any clubs. You know, a decision is a decision. I'm not going to try and make a decision because it's in Chelsea's favour or Burnley's favour. I'm just going to say it as it is and how I believe that it is. And to be fair, all those decisions in that particular game by the referees were wrong. You know, they were wrong. And Sean was big enough to admit that afterwards. And say basically that Josie was in the right in that particular time of the incidents. But of course, if you're the manager of the other football club, you don't want to hear that someone's slagging your team off. So I basically, apart from the fact where the incidents were on the telly that you comment on, I kept quiet apart from that because I thought, I'm in a no-win situation here. I can't win with Daichi and I can't win with Josie.
Is it not fair to say that it's not your job to be everyone's mate on the show? I know you don't invite someone into the studio and then give them a hard time. That's because it's not question time or news night. But
it's there to come on, and I will sort of like, if it's a footballing issue, I will fairly give my point of view, which I do, you know. But I give it in a way, and that's why the players like goals on coming to watch coming on goals on Sunday. If say it's Sean Dyche and it's one of his players, when they have the team meeting on Monday morning, Sean Dyche will be saying to Danny Ings or Jason Shackle or whatever, why did you do this? Why did you do that? Not me saying, look at that, that's absolutely shocking, that's disgusting, you know. When I was a player, I never wanted to hear that, but I wanted the manager to say, well, why is he doing this? This is what he should have done, this is how he could have done it. You know, all those guests that come on goals on Sunday, whether they've got problems or they're in contract situations with, you know, that we have Premier League managers who come on there and have been told that if you say X, X and X, your compensation will be stopped, right? So they come on goals on Sunday because they know, having spoken to me, that, oh, Cammy, I can't talk about that. So it'll be in the, you know, say it was John Carver, you know, for tomorrow and he got the sack after the game on Sunday, and then we had him on, and he would say, look, I can't say I can talk about certain issues, but I won't be able to talk about other issues because I can't. And as far as I'm concerned, that's fine. That is fine. You know, there isn't another show that get the guests that we get. There isn't one. And the only way we're going to get that is by people trusting us, and they trust that we won't stitch them up. And that's how I prefer it to be. You know, we're not Jonathan Dimbleby, we're not, you know, David Frost, we don't profess to be. I'm an ex-player, an ex-football manager and a TV presenter. I am not there to give someone a grilling and say you should have done this and you should have done that. I'd prefer them to come on in their own free will. If they've got something to say, we let them say it, and we can challenge them to a certain extent, but we don't want to challenge them to the way that they need to be upset.
But was he not doing your job for you? Should you and Ben not have? Because most of Jose's arguments, you could pick him apart pretty easily without, in a very nice way, but just go, well, hold on, Jose, you know, what about you sending your staff in rotation to harass the fourth official? Could you not say that this Ashley Barnes challenge wasn't actually a foul? You know, things like that. Without... I just personally thought you gave him a kind of an easy ride.
If we did, we did. But that's what I'm saying. If we did, we did. You know, the fact is, he's doing me a favour by coming on goals on Sunday. You know, and the last thing I want him to do is get up and walk off. And off the pitch, he's amazing. He's amazing. He's a really top fella. I'd have to say that. And that's not just Jose or me or whatever. That is 99.9% of the people that I know, whether it be working in football, whether it be boss of a company, whether it be anything else, you know. You give somebody that power to be the boss of a company, and then you tell me that they haven't changed in some sort of way, I'd have to laugh at you and say, I don't believe you. I don't believe you. I just don't believe you. I'm, you know, I know one person who I worked with, who then became a boss, and I just couldn't understand. I couldn't understand how he could treat me in that way. And then it's only when you become a manager, you realize that, unfortunately, you have to take that stance away from it. You know, you take that stance and, you know, you can no longer be familiar in the same way that you were before.
You seem fairly unique in the world of football and TV presenters in that everyone, no one has a bad word to say about Chris Kamara.
That's brilliant though, isn't it?
Oh, it's fantastic.
What a position to be in.
How do you think that's come about? Just you're
because
a nice
I'm
guy?
Fair. No, because I'm fair. You know, like I said, it you know, if you're a pundit, take the Soccer Saturday person first. I go to a football ground on a Saturday, right? I will shout for Manchester United as loud as I will shout for Manchester City. So if they score a goal, I'm as them. So they don't know whether I want them to win or them to win. I might have put them on the coupon, but it doesn't make any difference to me. My coupon doesn't make any difference, right? So that's how I think it should be. I think when you're a reporter and you're going to watch a match, don't favour anybody. Just go and enjoy the match. And I go and enjoy the match. And I'm not negative. I'm not like some football pundits who go to the ground and before they've decided it's going to be 0-0 and this, that and the other. Football surprises you at times. And there are ways you can look at a football match. There are ways you can look, you know, 4-all, 5-all draws are absolutely brilliant to watch because there's chances here, there and everywhere and you're going to see loads and loads of goals. But in other ways, Queen's Park Rangers going to Chelsea and getting a 0-0 draw, how did they do it? How did well did they defend? You know, how did they stop them scoring goals? Did they need to bow down and just let the opposition win? No, they didn't. They work at it. And so you can look at things from different point of view. And that's the way that I like to cover it. And the way that that's the way that the fans see us. And, you know, long may that continue because I don't want to be biased to anybody. And then on goals on Sunday, when we do the action and when we do the analysis on a Sunday, we are straight down the middle. Referees get more of a kick in than the opposition. And the reason why, because they make more mistakes than you know, some of the decisions that they get wrong. But in terms of the teams, I stay 100% impartial.
So if you're in a nightclub, Steven Gerrard is there, you want Elton John, he wants Phil Collins, who would win the fight?
Oh, crikey, well, Elton all day long. It's got to be, you know.
Right.
Don't let the sun go down on me, that's the one.
So I hope you're not upset that we give you a hard time with the drugs and beer.
I'm not at all, honestly. Like I said, you know, to have got an interview like that has gone down in history.
Mm.
It could only have happened the way that me and Ben did it, or me and Bert did it, because I was early.
just as a matter of interest, actually, because everyone's a critic these days and you've got Twitter and Facebook and, you know, so you automatically, if you do something that's perceived to be wrong, you get hammered. Does that hurt, or does it wash over you, or does it bother you, or do you just goes with the territory? And
to be honest, I got a bit of stick on Twitter over that Jose Mourinho thing, but I never hardly get any stick. I get people are so nice, you know, to me now. It's just amazing. So, you know, I cherish that. Most of the
Have a dark side.
Most of the anger was from. No.
My wife. Do you drown puppies or something?
No, not at all. I love dogs. but most of the time, I just think, you know, I've got such a wonderful life. It's absolutely great. Keep enjoying it. I enjoy it a lot. I haven't been home for the last 3 weeks, and I'll go home next week to see my wife. And but she's all right because come May the 25th, we're off for 10 or 11 weeks, so she'll see plenty of me then.
I believe you, in a previous life as well, you were a pioneer of video games. You're clearly happy with your lot in life. But What bugs you about football these days?
Nothing at all. No, I love it. You know, people get caught up and head down, and you know, the game's a shocker. The game's this. You know, they earn too much money. They do. I'm just still living the dream. You know, I really am. You know, my life is still just going onwards and upwards. You know, to be able to do what I've done with Sky. Sky have been brilliant for me. Now I've moved into ITV. They have embraced me with both arms, you know, with Ninja Warrior and Give a Pet a Home, and they've got more projects that they'd like me to do for them. It's just amazing, really, you know.
Were you very upset when Dion Dublin got the gig on Homes Under the Hammer?
No, not one for me.
Did you eye on that?
No, not for me. Daytime TV, he can have that one, yeah. Although I did do this morning. No, it's... You know, I'm sure he wishes he'd got Ninja Warrior at 7 o'clock on a Saturday night before Britain's Got Talent.
You're pals with David Moyes, I believe. Do you think he got a fair crack at Manchester United?
Of course he never.
No?
No, of course he never. No, it just goes to show, doesn't it, the perception, what it's all about. You know, Fellaini's Louis van Gaal's best player over the last couple of months, 3 months, right? Moyes, if he'd have played him up front instead of Van Persie and or Rooney, or with just him and Rooney, he'd have got slaughtered. He would have got absolutely slaughtered, you know. But he can afford to leave Falcao on the bench, Van Persie out injured, and play Fellaini up front and get away with it, Louis van Gaal. That's not to say he's not doing a good job, because he obviously is, but he spent a lot of money. David Moyes wasn't allowed to spend that money. It's all about perception, you know. Whoever was going to follow Fergie was going to be in trouble. For them to give a manager who didn't have a record of winning loads of trophies was the thing that sort of like put people off David Moyes. And that's the only difference between him and Louis van Gaal, is that Louis' CV is glittered with prizes. David's wasn't. But you're not going to tell me, if he'd have been given another season, and this season had it ended in the similar fashion that Louis van Gaal's finishing this one, he'd have probably been sacked anyway, because they would have expected to have been in the top two this time around, but he wasn't given that comfort zone to be able to do it.
You say you're quite good mates with Jose. How different is the Jose you have a drink with in the office behind a closed door to pantomime villain Jose that the rest of us
chalk
know?
Chalk and cheese.
Yeah.
Chalk and cheese.
I've always suspected that, but it's interesting to hear. How so?
Absolute chalk. It's only the same as a player. You know, when people talk about me, we saw you as a player and everything like that. I went on that football pitch and put a shirt on because I wanted to win for the football club that I played for, right? You saw me afterwards for a drink in the bar and everything else like that. You saw the real Chris Kamara. You saw the person, you know? The competitor, the professional, was the one that you see, and the professional and the competitor is the one that you see of Jose.
I believe you're a big Elton John fan.
I should have had a meet and greet with him at one of his concerts at the O2 Arena. Was it O2 or Wembley? I'm not sure where it was now. About
Wembley.
4 years ago, yeah. I think it was Wembley, yeah. About 4 or 5 years ago, and he got the flu. Oh. That was absolutely devastating.
He did or you did?
Hey?
He did.
Oh, yeah, no, he pulled out the concert. So I was devastated, yeah, absolutely devastated. So he's on my bucket list before I pop my clogs.
I think one of your classic gaffes was that you said Graham Taylor had straightened out.
Had straightened him out, yeah. But it was genuine, it wasn't. I wasn't looking to... and he went, and Graham was brilliant, wasn't he? He went, I don't think I quite did that.